Good morning. So last time we talked a bit about why we're using Base2 everywhere. We could build computers which natively use Base10 numbers, but this was just less efficient. That's not what we see in computers we use today. Talked about endianness, this idea that, well, we have memory where we can address bytes, these 8-bit chunks, but we have bigger values in there, and we need to decide, well, where do we keep the parts of those values in those 8-bit chunks? And we had two logical decisions, little endian, where the lowest number chunk had the least significant part, and big endian, where the lowest number chunk had the most significant part. And both of them are used, and in this class, all the systems we care about will use little endian. We talked about unsigned integers and, you know, sort of the possible values, and gave the example, the formula for that, which was 2 to the n, the quantity minus 1. We started talking about negative integers. So this is one of the two things we were missing. So one was negative numbers, and the other was non-whole numbers. So I started with negative numbers. How do we represent them? And we're going to look at three schemes, which have this common property that for unsigned numbers that are in range, so which are small enough that they have a possible representation as a possibly negative number, but possibly not, we're going to have the same bit pattern. This means that most of the time when we're converting something like 17 between our unsigned numbers and our signed numbers, we won't have to do any work. And to do this means that we'll have the top bit of the number be a signed bit. So it's going to be 1 if the number is negative and 0 otherwise. And so that means that we have this number line here for our unsigned integers, and for signed integers, the first part of this is going to be exactly the same. But we have to figure out an assignment for, right after that, what is the number which goes here? What number has the bit pattern 1 and all zeros? And we have to decide what number goes at the end, what number has the bit pattern 1, 1, 1, and all ones. And there are three options we'll talk about. So one, and probably the easiest for most people to come up with, is sign and magnitude. And with sign and magnitude, essentially, we're going to have our top bit, our sign bit, be a minus sign. So if it's 0, you think of putting a plus sign in front of the rest of the bits. If it's 1, you think of putting a minus sign in front of the rest of the bits. So this means that 1 and all zeros, this place right here, that's negative 0 is what we'll call it. So another representation of 0. And 1 and all 1s is the most negative number. We have another option here, which is 1's complement. So we'll talk about where that comes from. And 2's complement, which is the one we're building up to, which is in fact the one pretty much all machines you know of use. So let's talk about some features here which are good and bad. So one thing is that sign and magnitude and 1's complement have two representations of 0. And this is actually extremely inconvenient because it means if we want to implement the equals operator, it actually needs to do something different for signed numbers because we need to make sure that 0 equals 0 no matter the sign. This is something that you can do, and there have been real computers built with these representations, which have hardware support, so there are two versions of equal, one for unsigned and one for signed. But we'd really like it to be the case that we can just not worry about whether a number is signed or unsigned when figuring out how to compare it for equality. That we can just look at the bits, if they're the same, they're equal, if they're not, they're not. Another thing you might notice here is that we have, in some of these representations, we have more possible negative numbers. So this is a feature of 2's complement. So a compromise we've chosen is that we have more possible negative numbers, whereas these other representations, because they have two zeros, don't. But in 2's complement, we to in exchange for having 2 zeros, we've gotten rid of that extra representation. And in both 1 and 2's complement, all 1's is the least negative number. And we'll see why you'd want to do that. So this is a deliberate choice, and sort of what the reason we're going away from sine and magnitude is that it's actually useful to have all 1's, the most over to the side on this table, be the least negative number. And big reason is let's look at sine and magnitude. So in sine and magnitude, if I have 6, it's there. If I have negative 6, I just flip the 1 at the top, so 0 to 1 at the top to get negative 6. So that's nice and simple, but we have this unnice property, which is that if we want to add 1 to a number, we actually have to pay attention to that top bit. So adding 1 is different depending on which part of the number line we're on. And it would be really nice if we didn't have to have that be a special case. We'd like to have handling our signed numbers be as much like handling unsigned numbers as practical. And this is something that we can't do with sine and magnitude, and it's the big reason why people designing computers have shied away from this sort of representation. That we need to do all sorts of special things for this operation. So in 1's complement, what we've chosen to do is we've put the most negative number right next to the most positive one, and negative 0 all the way at the end. So this means that basically we have sort of mirror images in our number line. That we start from 0, go to the most positive in this direction, start from 0, go to the most negative in this direction. So our negative 6 is the same distance from the other side of the line. And this means that if you want to negate a number, you don't have to do counting, you just flip all the bits. That's how we negate a number in 1's complement. So flipping a number is actually really simple. So negating a number is really simple in hardware in 1's complement, and even by hand. You just write out the bits, write out the other opposite of. And adding 1 is the same no matter the original sign. So except for the cases where we're going over this boundary here and this boundary at the end, addition works exactly the same, and therefore subtraction works exactly the same, except in the cases where we're going over the boundary between positive and negative. So this simplifies the hardware to implement this, because most of the time addition works exactly the same way, and subtraction works exactly the same way, and multiplication is just repeated addition, so multiplication almost works exactly the same way, and so on. So this means that we can do mostly the same stuff we were doing for unsigned for 1's complement, but we have this weird special case with negative 0 still, that's going to be extra work, and this special case about what happens when we cross this boundary here. So in 2's complement, we take 1's complement and we get rid of this issue with 2 versions of 0. And the way we do that is we shift all our negative numbers down by 1. So instead of having negative 0 at the end of this line, we have negative 1. And instead of having our most negative number be the negation of the most positive number, it's 1 less. So we have roughly the same work. And now this means that to negate a number, we flip all the bits and add 1 to the bit pattern, we flip all the bits and add 1 as if it were unsigned. And that will negate any number. That's the rule, you can just memorize that. And by doing this, adding 1 works the same no matter the original sign, and this even applies when we're crossing this boundary. If we add 1 to negative 1, we're going to do We're going to take 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, plus 1. In binary, we're going to get a 0. We're going to carry a 1. We're going to get a 0 all the way up to here. And we're going to have a 1 at the end, which gets cut off. So adding 1 to negative 1, if we just ignore stuff that gets carried off the end of the number, even still works. So this is really great. This means that for addition, except for the issue of what happens when we cross this boundary, where, well, the result is out of range anyways. So as long as the result's in range, we don't need to do anything special. And it turns out the same thing applies to subtraction. So this is the big advantage of 2's complement, is that even though, you know, it's maybe a little less elegant than 1's complement or sine and magnitude as far as making sense straight away how to translate negative numbers, this is mixed addition and therefore multiplication as repeated addition and subtraction work very similarly to unsigned. Basically the same most of the time. So 2's complement is the winner. So when you have an int in C on any machine you've used, it's a 2's complement integer. It's that many bits represented this way. You have one more negative number you can fit in there than the positive numbers. There's exactly one representation of 0, and so on. So this is one view of 2's complement, and because it's so important, I'm going to give you an alternate way of thinking about it. And the alternate way is you can think of 2's complement as saying, we're going to have our normal binary number with a 2 to the 0s, a 2 to the 1s, a 2 to the 2s, and 2 to the 3s place. And our top place is going to be a 2 to the negative 4s place for a 4-bit number. And for a 5-bit, it would be 2 to the negative 5, and so on. The math works out this way. You can think of this is a sort of flipping all the bits would give us 2 to the negative 4, 2 to the 4 minus 1 is all 1s, and we have one more than that. That's one way of thinking about how this works out. But this is an alternate way you can look at 2's complement, is that that it's sort of like a binary number, an unsigned, but the top place, we just negate what the thing is there. And another way of looking at 2's complement numbers is to have sort of a circle. And this makes it more obvious why addition works the same way. So here I have 3-bit 2's complement and unsigned numbers. So we have 0, 1, 2, 3. And these are the numbers which are the same regardless of whether we do unsigned or 2's complement. And then we have our possibly negative numbers. So we have 4 and unsigned, which would be negative 4, the most negative number in 2's complement. Then 5 or negative 3, then 6 or negative 2, then 7 or negative 1, because all 1's is going to be just negative 1, the least negative number in 2's complement. And you can see from this picture, so adding 1 works anywhere along the circle, except when we go out of range. So when we go from positive 3 to negative 4, we went out of range, so that didn't work, but otherwise it works exactly the same way. And this also can show you how addition by negative numbers and subtraction still works. So adding negative 1 is the same as adding 7. And adding 7 moves around this much, and you can see that anywhere we put that partial circle, we're going to get the same, we're going to do a natural subtracting 1, except in the case where we go out of range. So any questions about how this works? Hopefully this gives an intuition for why it's the same, even when we're like adding negative numbers or subtracting negative numbers, it's still going to work out the same way as unsigned math. So this means that in our computer that we don't have, except for multiplication and division, we don't have separate hardware to handle signed versus unsigned. It's all exactly the same for addition and subtraction, and even for multiplication and division, it's mostly the same. So we just have a few special cases to take care of. Okay. So I've talked about what 2's complement is represented as, so let's go through the issue of converting to it. So there are 2 ways to convert to 2's complement, which is something you might need to do, because you might see a bit pattern that's printed out in the wrong way, you want to convert it, or you might need a program to do that, write a program to do that. So there's 2 rules you can use, and I would recommend memorizing one of them, easiest. So one way is that we can have a number we want to convert to its complement, you look at the absolute value, you convert it to bits as an unsigned number, and then you flip all the bits and add 1 as an unsigned number. So here we have minus 14. I convert 14 to an unsigned number. That's 2 plus 4 plus 8 is 14. So that's why it's 1110. I flip all the bits. And note that I added a bunch of zeros because I want, in this case, I'm getting 8-bit results. If I wanted more bits in my result, I wanted a bigger number, I'd need to have more bits. If I wanted 32 bits, I ran out of space in this slide. But that's what you need to do. We need to have all the leading zeros. Because we're flipping the bits, we need to flip all the leading zeros. We can't just not write them. So I flip all these leading zeros, I add 1 to that, and so I get 1 plus 1 is 10. I carry that 1 from that there, and I get this bit pattern. And that's going to be negative 14 in 8-bit 2's complement. And we can do this for, say, negative 127. 127 is 1 less than 2 to the 8, so it's all 1's except for the first bit. I flip all the bits, I get 1 and all zeros. I add 1, I get 1, all zeros and a 1. And it also works for the most negative number. Here, negative 128 is the most negative number we can represent with 8 bits in 2's complement. It's that one which doesn't have a representation in the 128 doesn't have a representation in 8-bit 2 complement, but negative 128 does. But we get 128 as an unsigned number. That's what we mean. So we flip all the bits of 128, we get 0 and all 1's. We add 1 to that, we just carry up and have 1 and all zeros, which is exactly where it was, we were on the number line. So any questions about what I did here, how to do this procedure? Okay. So another way of thinking about 2's complement is that you can take the absolute value and subtract from 2 to the n. And this is probably thinking about it more of that there's this negative 2 to the x place at the beginning of the number. And I, this is 128. But it works the same way. You can memorize either way of doing things. I think usually flipping all the bits and add 1 is easier, but they're both equivalent. They'll both give you the right answer. So any questions about conversion for 2's complement? So this is converting to 2's complement. So for converting from 2's complement, well, it's the opposite. You look at the sign bit, and you can apply this procedure to take the number and convert it back. So if you flip all the bits and add 1, that negates a negative number to a positive 1, and that will give you the positive version. So if we can just apply this procedure again. So if we take this number here and we flip all the bits, we get 1101, we add 1, we get 1110, which is 14. And that would be how we get back the original absolute value, and you just know it's minus that number. So that would be how I'd read this and say, oh, it's 14. And we can do the same thing for the others. We take this, we flip all the bits, we get a bunch of ones, we add one, and we get 1000, which is going to be 128. And this is just using the property that flipping all the bits in one negates a number in two's complement. And you can do the same thing with this other version, that doing this procedure negates a number in two's complement. And you can use it to make a negative number positive, so you know its value, so you can write it down more easily. If we say, asked you on an exam to convert a number that we gave you in two's complement to decimal as like a normal number, that would be how you, a way you could do it. Okay. So any questions about conversion in either direction? Hopefully everyone's ready to do that if we ask it on an exam. Okay, so another thing, note about two's complement, which is a very nice property, is let's say I have this two's complement number, which we can find out if we flip all the bits, we get 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0 plus 1 is going to give us 1 is 1 plus 8, 9 plus 32. So 32 plus 9 should be 41. So this is negative 41. So let's say I want to convert that to a 16-bit 2's complement number. So one thing I could do, assuming I didn't mess up the math, it's negative 41, tell me if I did. But one thing I could do is I could convert it to decimal, then convert that decimal number back to 2's complement with 16 bits instead of 8. But there's an easier way. There's a general rule that you can extend a number in 2's complement by copying the sign bit. So I can just say, this starts with this has a 1 in the sign bit, I'll just make copies of that until it gets big enough for a 16-bit number. And if I have a positive number, it has a 0 in the sign bit, I just make copies of that 0 until it gets big enough for a 16-bit number. That's just a special case of what you've been doing before when we give you an 8-bit number and you need a 16-bit version of it. Note that this also means, conversely, that if we have a 2's complement number that's 16 bits and it would fit in an 8-bit 2's complement number, we can just take the bottom 8 bits and it will work as long as it's still in range. So we're just chopping off a bunch of repeated 1's which won't do anything to the value, assuming it's in range for the smaller size. And this is sometimes called sign extension. So any questions about this, why it works? Okay. So that brings us to another topic with integers. So we talked about that there's this weird area on the number line where we go from positive to negative, where weird things happen. And typically, what we're going to do in our computers is we're going to have actually the same circuitry for signed and unsigned arithmetic. And so usually, if you take our, say, maximum positive number, add 1, we're just going to produce the results that we do for unsigned, and we're going to get a negative number. Just because we're going to do the addition as unsigned, it's going to wrap around, sort of the intuition that we have that circle, we're going to just keep go to the next thing, or if we add more than 1, we're going to go an appropriate number of steps forward, and we're going to get a negative number. We're going to get the wrong result, but this is usually what you'll see when you actually do it. addition. And similarly, for signed, when we have the maximum unsigned, number and try to add to it, we'll also wrap around. We'll do the same thing. We're not gonna trigger an error typically because we're, you know, for signed arithmetic, that's a normal operation. For signed arithmetic, this is negative 1 plus 1 is 0. Yes. So if you added 2, would it be 1? Yes. If you add 3, it would be 2, and so on. And you can do this for 16-bit, 32-bit, 64-bit. You'll get these overflows when you have a large enough value and add to it. And you can have the same sort of thing if you have a very, very negative value and subtract from it. You can get a positive value. By this wraparound. And the way I like thinking about it is that circle of values and just that we go around the circle with addition and subtraction without regard to whether, you know, it's actually sort of correct mathematically. And usually in C++, it's going to be the case that you're going to get these results, that the compiler is not going to trigger some sort of error or exception. It's just going to do this. Not unheard of for hardware to support triggering that error, but it's not something that's common on modern machines. So this means, for example, if we take have an unsigned int and you write code where you set it to the maximum possible value for an unsigned int and you add 10, you'll get 9. And if I set it to one less, I set it to, instead of dot 4 billion something something 295, I set it to 4 billion something something 294, and out of 10 I get 8, yeah. And so on. And mostly the same thing happens with signed numbers. So a neat about the C++ language is that for some reason the people, well, for reasons that, you know, are mostly not relevant, but the people who made the C++ language decided we're not actually going to say that you need to have a wraparound happen for signed integers. I guess the main reason they decided this probably was that they cared about systems that weren't two's complement, which we don't anymore. And the secondary reason is that it gives the compilers flexibility to, for example, store your value in a bigger number, in a bigger space, which typically they don't take advantage of, but it's there. So usually you'll get the wraparound behavior because if the compiler does the natural thing, that's what's going to happen. When we talk about assembly later on in the semester, you'll see that the actual underlying operations in the hardware do this wraparound behavior for positive, for unsigned and signed numbers. The reason you might not see this happen on a modern compiler is sometimes the compiler will say, I'm gonna assume you aren't doing this when it optimizes your code. When you say, pass a flag saying, make my code really fast, the compiler might say, well, you didn't mean to do wraparound, so I'm going to assume that it's okay if I don't handle that case. But the underlying operations actually do wraparound. So any questions about integer overflow? Okay, so let's start our next topic, which is about real numbers. So I have some numbers here. I would love to do math on these numbers. So how are we actually going to represent those? And you've kind of seen a hint because you've probably used float and double in Java, or at least one of them. Then we're going to have some other type, which isn't an integer type, to represent these non-whole numbers. So there are a bunch of options for representing these numbers, much more than we have for integers, even negative integers. And they have all these trade-offs, like how much space are we taking up, how accurate is it? If we're representing square root of 2 and pi and negative 1/107, and we want to do it exactly accurately, well, things get really, really complicated. Like, you can do that, but then you have a special representation for pi because it's not a fraction, and a special representation for square root of 2 and it's not a fraction, and doing math is really hard. So that's not what we're going to do. We're going to have to do some approximations in order to make our representation be feasible to work with. And efficient to work with. So probably the simplest way we could represent numbers approximately is this idea known as fixed point. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our number and we're going to write it out as a binary number with things after the radix point. And we'll talk maybe a little more later about how do you get this repeating fraction in binary. It's the same way you get it in base 10. You can do long division in binary. But it does seem intimidating, but we get this repeating fraction, and then we decide we're going to use, in this case, 8 bits. And I'm just going to say that the point is after the fourth bit. So I have a small range of numbers I can represent, especially since I'm only using 8 bits, but it's pretty straightforward. I just take the number in binary and write out the parts up to 4 after the binary point. And you can think of that we're representing a signed or unsigned integer y, and we're just dividing that by 2 to the k, where k is, in this case, 4, to give us the actual value it represents. So a fixed point like this is actually pretty common in the real world, though it's not something you've seen in, say, Java. It has some real advantages. The biggest advantage is the math is really similar to integer math. Addition and subtraction are literally the same. And multiplication and division are the same, except you have to do some adjustment at the end. You get a result which is off by something related to 2 to the k, so you have to move bits around to correct for that at the end. But you can reuse your fast integer multiplication and integer division hardware or code, and just do that adjustment, which is very easy, just moving bits around, because 2 to the k means add a bunch of zeros or remove a bunch of bits and at the end. It's also really easy to understand what values are represented well. We know that things, since we have 4 bits that are 2 to the minus 4, 2 is the minimum precision. We have increments of 2 to the minus 4. You know that if you see a value, you can represent that it's accurate to 2 to the minus 4 with this number of bits. You know the maximum value is about 2 to the 4. That's pretty easy to see, and it's easy to reason about how accurate this representation is. So this is really used, especially for people who read really fast approximate math. But it has some big disadvantages, which is why it's not the dominant thing we see, especially implemented in hardware. So one thing is that the range of numbers is pretty small. That, even if we have 64-bit fixed point, let's say we put the binary point 32 bits in, then we can represent numbers from 2 to the minus 32 to 2 to the 32. This is much less than you say expect your calculator to do. And you have to choose where you put that binary point, and some applications are working with lots of very big numbers. That's why they want this feature. Some applications are working with very, very small numbers, like 2 to the minus 50, 10 to the minus 20, that sort of thing. And if you make the wrong choice, well, you're bad for those applications. And we like something which is a bit more flexible, which will be good for more kinds of calculations, without the calculations having to rearrange all their numbers to be in a certain range. And so we're going to start with a different way you've hopefully seen for representing numbers approximately, which is scientific notation. So I'm starting with base 10 scientific notation. So here, 1/3, that's 3.33 times 10 to the minus 1, minus 1/107 is negative 1.42 times 10 to the 1, so on. So this is the way we're going to represent numbers. So we're going to do this, we're going to do it actually for base 2, but we'll start with base 10. I'm going to talk about names for the components of each part of this scientific notation that we're going to use for the rest of the day. So we have a sign at the beginning, and in the representation we're going to use in our machines for this, we're going to represent the sign with a bit, like with sign and magnitude. We're going to have something which is, if it's 0, it means a plus sign, if it's 1, it means a negative sign. We have the number, what is sometimes called the coefficient, we're going to call this the mantissa. It's the name we're going to use. This is the thing that comes before the base to the power. We have the exponent, which is the exponent of our power base, and our base in this, for normal scientific notation that you've done in science, is probably 10. We're going to change this to 2 because computers have a much easier time working with powers of 2. But otherwise, it's going to be all the same concepts. And we're just going to do things in binary instead of base 10. So we're going to get a certain number of bits instead of a certain number of digits. Here I have 3 digits. We're going to fix a number of bits we're going to write out for every number in the mantissa. And we're going to use an exponent based on the power of 2. Obviously, it's supposed to be 2 to the minus 1. So we can write things as base 2 scientific notation. And it's the same sort of procedure you use for base 10, except, of course, coming up with this continued fraction probably seems a little daunting. We'll talk about that a bit later. So we have these numbers as base 2 scientific notation here. And we're going to work on taking one of these numbers. We'll start with this one down here, which is the approximate value of negative 100 to the 7, 100 over 7. So that's an approximation because, of course, we just like you can't write that in decimal exactly, you can't write it in base 2 exactly. So we have our approximation with this, with in this case, 10 bits after the binary point of that number, and times 2 to the third, and a minus sign at the beginning. So we're going to take this, and we're going to write it out as bits, and this is going to be the representation we're going to choose. And we have to choose, well, how many bits do we use for each part? And this is an arbitrary choice, and there's some conventions. Most of these are set by a standard published by IEEE. So you'll hear about IEEE floating point. This means that IEEE has a standard with several formats for floating point numbers where they decided how many bits do we write out for this, where do we put those bits, and so on. So I'm going to start out with an example of taking this number and converting it into the format of IEEE half precision floating point. So half precision sounds very small, and that's it is, so I'm using something small to start out with. We'll go to single precision, which is what floats are, a bit later. So we have our three parts we're going to write down. So we have a sign, and here we have a negative, so we're going to write out a 1. The convention in IEEE has chosen is that positive numbers, we write 0 for the sign, negative numbers, we write 1 for the sign. For the mantissa, we're going to write out 10 bits. And you notice there are 11 bits written here. We're going to have this trick that because we're using binary, we know the number always starts with a 1 point, because if it started with a 0, we'd have to adjust our exponent and move it over so it starts with a 1. In base 10, you can't do this because it could start with a 1, a 2, or a 3, or so on. But here it's always a 1, so we're going to use this trick of not storing that leading 1. We're only going to store the stuff after it. So we're going to write out these 10 bits just as they are. And then we have an exponent. And the way IEEE has chosen to store negative numbers is not any of the ones we've talked about. They chose yet a different option. And what they've done is they say that we're going to take our number and we're going to add what is called a bias to it. In this case, the bias is going to be 15. 15, you might note, is I think it's 15. Which is going to be, that's 2 to the 4 plus 1, or minus 1, 2 to the 4 minus 1, which is not a coincidence with the number of bits, I believe. Hopefully I just have the right bias here. So we're going to store 18. We're going to have this general pattern, we add the bias, so if we had a negative exponent, so if we had negative 1, we store negative 1 plus 15, is 14. The reason they choose this is that, except when we're converting to print numbers out, like basically we don't really care what 2 to the 0 is. We just care about the relative difference, so it's easier to have a representation where it's even closer to unsigned, because we're not often converting exponents to print them out. So we're just going to write those out, and the order IEEE has chosen is that we write out the sign, then the exponent, then the mantissa. A way you can remember this is you write out the most important parts, the leftmost, just like in a normal number. And the exponent is more important to the value than the rest. And if we were storing this on a little endian system, this is 2 bytes, so we'd write out the 2 bytes, probably in this order, though it could vary. Where the least significant part comes as byte 0, but IEEE doesn't actually specify exactly how you do that. So any questions about what I did here? Why 15? So we have a 3-bit number here, so there's 32 possible values for this. And we want to split them up into about half of them being positive exponents and half being negative. So that's why it's about 16. The exact choice of 15 and not 16 is kind of arbitrary. I believe there's a justification for it. Probably there's a paper by Kahan, who was very influential in making the standard, which explains why they chose exactly that number. But basically, we want to split up into half positive and half negative exponents. The idea being that numbers around 1 are the most important to represent. Yes. So you can think of this, that this is our, that we would convert this to an unsigned number, and then can write that unsigned number out as a little endian system, and this would be this is the least significant byte.
So how did that become what we have in byte 0?
So the rule in little endian is we write the least significant byte in the lowest numbered byte. What do you mean?
The first one is 001001001.
Okay. No. Transcription errors are my fault. Okay. I meant, yes.
Okay, so it would be exactly the same.
Yes. I am sorry for that very confusing error.
Okay, sorry.
I will have to correct this slide. I must have had a different number and not noticed. Yeah, so it would be exactly the same bits, but that would be the order. This is just to show the order. Yes, I just looked at the colors and said, must match. didn't bother reading the bits. Yeah, so that's just to show the order that you'll typically see it in. Basically, the rule is that we treat this, we take this as if it were an unsigned number and store it in that order. So another way of looking at this is that we have a sign, an exponent. We take the exponent minus 15 times 2 to that power, 1 in the mantissa, 2 and 2 to the sine. That's how we compute the value. And notice that when we did this, we had a number which was a little off. So we made an approximation from what we started. And we are off by 3/896. And this is about what we expect. We have 10 bits and the implicit 1, so we have about 11 bits of actual, you know, stuff we're writing out, which is about 3 1/2 decimal digits. And so that's about the precision we can expect from half precision floating points. So that seems a little low, which is why there are other formats. And the difference with these other formats is just that we choose, and this is 2^4, this one. We choose different sizes. So our familiar float is 32 bits instead of 16 bits in total. And what IEEE chose to do is have 8 bits for the exponent. This means their bias is 2^7 - 1. So they take the raw exponent as an unsigned number, and you subtract 127 to get the actual value. So an exponent pattern of 127, which is 0 and all 1s, is 2^0. And they have, therefore, 23 bits left over for the mantissa. And there's also double, which just has bigger sizes. And IEEE even defines a quad format, which is twice as big as double, which has 128 bits in total and even bigger sizes. And generally what they're doing when they get bigger sizes, the exponent gets a little bigger, but what they're mostly doing is allowing for a bigger mantissa. So it's more precision, not so much more range. There's a bit more range, but it's more that there's a lot more precision. Any questions on this? Okay, so let's go through an example of converting to single precision, starting with this number. So I have 25.25. This is exactly 101/4. So I can just do that, and I know 101/4. You know, just by the power of 2, so I can multiply this times 2^4/2^4 and get the 101/2^6 times 2^4, which I know that this is going to be greater than 1 and less than 2 because of the power of 2 I chose. I know 2^32 would make it less than 1, so 30 dividing by 32 would make it less than 1, so dividing by 16 is going to make it greater than 1 but less than 2. And I could just try numbers until I have that happen. So then I take 101 and convert it to binary. And that's going to be divided by 2^16. So I just move it over 6 binary points. So that was one way of doing things. I know that sometimes you'll have a number and you won't see that it's something over 4. There's another thing you can do, which is, well, I can say this is 2^4 fits into that, so let's subtract 2^4 from that. 2^3 fits into that, so let's subtract that. And I get 9.25 minus 2^3 is what's left over. And I can just keep doing this repeated subtraction. So I get 2 to the 4 plus 2 to the 3 plus 1.25. I can say, okay, does 2 to the 2 fit? No. Does 2 to the 1 fit? No. No, that's 2. Then I can say, okay, I'm going to subtract 1, 2 to the 0, and I get 2 to the 4 plus 2 to the 3 plus 2 to the 0 plus 0.25. Then I can say, does 2 to the minus 1 fit? No, that's 1 half. That's bigger than 2.25. So I take minus 2, that fits, so I subtract that. I get, this is plus 2 to the minus 2 plus here. And that, by doing this sort of repeated, let's try to subtract a power of 2, I can figure out the bit pattern that way. If I don't see, I can convert it to a fraction like this. Okay, so next time we'll talk more about this procedure of converting numbers to floating point. Possibly back again. Possibly go over this since I know this was very brief and this is kind of intimidating.